Welcome to another edition of the Terry Collins Show, presented by Tunnel to Towers, supporting America's greatest heroes. Donate just $11 per month by going to T2T.org. I'm John Arezzi, and joining me from the Sunshine State of Florida, the former skipper of the New York Mets and analyst on SNY's Baseball Night in New York, Mr. Terry Collins. Terry, welcome back for another episode, and this one is going to reunite you with a special guest.
Yeah, hi, John. I'm great to see you and great to be back on the show. This week's going to be very fun. I owe my career, certainly the last number of years, to this man, Sandy Alderson, who hired me after I came back from Japan to certainly manage the New York Mets. And obviously his leadership and his mentorship was the difference and helped us get to the World Series and the playoffs. And I owe him a lot, and I'm really honored to have him on the show tonight.
Yeah, we can't wait for that. That's going to be a good one. I do want to get talk to you about something. This past Saturday, Tunnel to Towers, our presenting sponsor, held a Flag Day event in Bradenton, Florida, with a groundbreaking for a veterans village they are building there. You attended the event. How was it?
Unbelievable. They should be very proud. What a tremendous job they've done. They did it at the event. There had to be 750 people there. They had a model home that they're going to be building, I think 40 of them for the veterans. Beautiful places. It's easily accessible if you have injuries. They're also going to build a dormitory for a lot of the vets who need help. There's going to be 24-hour medical care, 24/7. It's unbelievable what I saw and what I heard people talk about. They had many speakers there. State senator, mayor, they had a general, and everybody that was there. There had to be 15 standing ovations during these different speeches, and certainly a lot of people in the audience who have used it, that Tunnel to Towers has helped already. They couldn't say enough great things about it. What a foundation. I got a hat. I'm very, very proud to have it. On one side, obviously, it honors all of the police and fire. And the other side, it honors all the services. It's got the flag under the bill. So it's an honor to have it on. I really enjoyed my day. It was just spectacular talking to all the different people involved, not only just with Tunnels to Towers, but, you know, the former vets that were there that, you know, said, oh, this should have happened years ago. And listening to some of the people who have used Tunnels to Towers already, who've helped them, you know, paid for their house and did different things to help them, you know, get back into the flow of life. And it's an honor and a privilege to have them as our sponsor.
Yes, it is. And they do such wonderful things for so many families. And we will be here to support them, and they work with us, and we're just excited about continuing the relationship. And thank you on behalf of Tunnel to Towers, because they called and they were just so happy that you were able to attend that event. And we're glad that you were there to take it all in and see what they do firsthand.
I'll tell you, the lunch was tremendous also. So I got paid back for it.
There you go. And it was across the state, so you had to, you know, drive back and forth. But
that's right.
I'm glad that you were there. We got to talk a little baseball here before we get to talking with TC. I do want to just quickly mention that last week's show with Howie Rose was so well received by the fans. I mean, we gotten direct responses and messages. There's some people were even like crying, tearing up, especially when they heard the story that Howie told about when you were on the bus and say, I hope everybody here is on the right bus because this bus is going to the World Series. So there those memories and the interaction with you and Howie just really touched a lot of people from last week's episode. So I just wanted to let you know that people really responded to that one.
Well, thank you. He's a special human being. And you know, and the things we talked about on that show, John, I know a lot of people that they're Mets fans, but they love to listen to Howie Rose broadcast a game.
Yes, he's got he's part of the history. I mean, he is the radio voice of the New York Mets, and So we love Howie for sure. And he did such an amazing job even promoting his appearance on the show. And he really had a good time. He really had a good time with you. So that was great to see. Let's get to the Mets and what's going on with them with the leadoff here. What a turnaround for the New York Mets right now. They have inched closer to 500, which while early, they're back in the hunt for a wild card spot. They have been on fire, hitting on all cylinders recently. JD Martinez has been unbelievable, Terry, with great clutch hitting. Pete Alonso has awoken. His bat has awoken. Francisco Lindor is on fire. The whole team is on fire. Lindor in that leadoff spot. Nimmo's coming around. And now there's real optimism on this club. The question for you is, since their players-only meeting that took place and called by J.D. Martinez on May 29th, the team has really turned it all around. Give your assessment of this turnaround and the importance that perhaps that team-only meeting had.
Well, you know, John, one thing players, they're aware of, make no mistake, you know, people, they don't think players pay attention, and that is so far from the truth. They are aware of everything going on. So they know what's being written about them. They know it's being talked about them on talk shows. They hear it all. They have friends who listen and tell them. They've got relatives that tell them. So they're aware of it. So you have a players-only meeting, and basically you're saying, hey, look, we're better than this. We're a better team than this. You guys know it, and we know it. We got to block off. We got to block out the outside interference. And let's just go play the game the way we can. Let's do what we're supposed to do. Let's play the game correctly. You know, you look at JD. You know what? He's look at all the home runs in the last week. He's had like five right center field. I mean, he's using the whole field to hit. And that's just an example for these younger guys that are on this team to say, hey, look, there's nothing wrong with getting a base hit the other way, especially if it's two outs and a runner in scoring position. That drives in another run. And, yeah, you've gotten some guys. We knew they would get hot. We knew Pete would start swinging. We knew Lindor's way too good a player to continue to struggle. Brandon Nimmo, even though they switched spots and put him in a different role in the lineup, Brandon Nimmo can hit. And, you know, the one guy who's starting to come out a little bit is Jeff McNeil. The guy won a batting title 3 years ago. Of course, we got to get him going. So, yeah, that lineup has started to create runs, and it's made it easier for the pitching staff. That, hey, look, you know, you give up a run, fine. Just don't give up two because you know your team's going to score. And if you give up two, don't give up three. You know, it's makes the thought process a lot easier when the team's playing good, and they are playing good right now. And people can say, well, they've got a softer part of the schedule. Well, let's guess what? That's what a major league schedule is all about. That's why they play 162. But you know what? When you play, if your schedule is a little easier, those are the games you got to win. Those are the games that we're seeing are going to get us back to 500. And when we start to get healthy again, when you get Senga back and you got these other guys starting to swing the bat like they're capable of, Diaz is back pitching good in the ninth spot again. All of a sudden, the team starts coming around and we got a lot of baseball left. So anything can happen.
Yeah, a lot of energy there right now. And there are so many teams in the National League under 500 or just hovering around 500. Nine of them. There's nine teams that are all kind of bunched up right now in the standings for that, especially for that third wild card spot that all these teams are going to be fighting for. The focus really needs to now, I believe, Terry, for the Mets to start focusing on winning series against these teams that they're all kind of in parity with schedule-wise. Because when the playoffs happen, when the wild card happens, if there are ties, then they're going to go to that, who was better in the season? Who won more games during that season series? So is that something the Mets should kind of take a look at? It's like, all right, let's win series now against these teams that we're kind of close to in the standings.
Well, that's one of the things that every manager talks about at the beginning of the year. Hey, look, guys, you know, it's nice to win 18 in a row or 15 in a row, but you know what's really nice? To win two out of three, just keep winning series because that adds up in the end. And you're absolutely right, because now at the end of the season, the way it is now, those wins are going to come back to your benefit. But, you know, that's why baseball is such a great sport. The season is so long. There's so many highs and lows. That's why, you know, everybody said, hey, when you're going really good, don't get too high. because you're going to get humbled again. So, and you know what? When things are bad, don't get too low, because you're a professional player. And you know, if you start, things start getting better, your team will get better. So and they're going through it. And this is one of the highs. Obviously, they had a horrible May. Now they have a great June. You look up and it started at the All-Star break, and you're back at 500 or a game or higher above it or below it. You're right back in the hunt now. And now those last 70 games after the All-Star break, that'll determine who gets in those playoffs.
Yeah, it's re-energized everybody just seeing what's happening. And that's what I love about baseball, and I love the playoffs now with that extra wild card team, because it keeps so many teams in it, which means the fans stay in it as well, hoping, like, who knows what's going to happen. And it could go right down to that final game of the season. So I think baseball made a great move with that third wild card spot now. And it looks like the Mets are in the hunt. And, you know, a few weeks ago, they were like, they weren't in the hunt. Now they are. So anything can happen, like you said. Anything could happen. All right, we're going to take a look at this week in Mets history. And, Terry, we traditionally do here is we go over some events, historic events. But today, something a little different when it comes to Mets history, Terry. And on June 14th, 1987, in the Seinfeld universe, a ninth-inning error by Mets first baseman Keith Hernandez allowed the Phillies to score 5 runs and beat the Mets. After the game, Kramer and Newman encounter Pretty Boy Hernandez outside Shea Stadium, and they berate him. Kramer is hit by the magic loogie by second spitter Roger McDowell. It is an episode with Jerry Seinfeld, and Keith Hernandez was the star. A two-parter, one of the most beloved shows that will be remembered by Met fans ever. Terry, are you a huge, are you a Seinfeld fan? Did you ever see this show with Hernandez in it?
Of course. I've seen all the Seinfeld shows. I'm a big Jerry Seinfeld fan. I think the show was a riot. And, you know, of course, I have a great relationship with Keith. I've known Keith for a long time, but I've also known Roger McDowell for a long time. And there's no bigger prankster that ever put a Mets uniform on than Roger McDowell. Matter of fact, we're going to have him on the show here pretty soon. So wow. It was a great episode, and I love it that it's the anniversary of the show.
Yeah, that was kind of cool when we got that information. It was like, I'm going to bring it up to Terry, see what he thinks about this. And yeah, that was a magical episode with and Jerry's at a lot of Met games. He's a big Mets fan, obviously. Finally, Terry, June 15th, 1977, the Mets trade the player known as the franchise, Tom Seaver, to the Cincinnati Reds for Pat Zachary, Doug Flynn, Steve Henderson, and Dan Norman. It is a trade that broke the hearts of the fans in New York. Personally, it broke my heart. I was living in Boston at the time, and I was about done with the Mets for about 3 years after that because they traded away the franchise. Terry, talk about the legacy of Tom Seaver, not only to Met fans, but to baseball. And did you ever have any interactions with Seaver as a player, coach, or manager?
Well, first of all, you know, when you're as talented as Tom was, I mean, you're going to command respect from everybody in the league. He was so great on the mound, and, you know, he exemplified. You ever see a picture of Tom Seaver? He wasn't having fun. He was always smiling. And anytime I ever met Tom, he was always in a good mood. Always seemed like he was upbeat. And so, yeah, and here you got one of the greatest pitchers of all time on your team, and you trade him. There's going to be some sad fans on the way out. So when I was managing New York, I got to have Tom in several times. He would be in New York to do an appearance for certain things, and he always come by the office, always come in. And I'll tell you, one of the times it was very respectful. It was the year Ari Dickey won the Cy Young Award, and Tom came in, obviously two completely different pitchers. Tom was a big power guy, that big long stride, and Ari was a knuckleballer with a little short stride. And Tom said, you know, I'd like you to do one favor for me. And I said, well, of course, anything. He said, I would really be honored to meet Ari Dickey. I went out and got Ari Dickey in the clubhouse and said, Tom Seaver would be honored to meet you. And Ari Dickey started crying. He was so touched to think that this guy wanted to meet him when he'd known he was in my office, would have been scratching at the door to say hi to Tom. And that's the kind of guy he was.
Wow. That's a great, great memory. And what a personality Seaver was, and what a legend, and what he meant to the game of baseball. You could check out Mets history every day by going to @NYM History on X. And now it's time for Talking with TC, the segment everyone is going to be talking about. Today's Talking with TC guest is a baseball lifer who was the architect of the 2015 National League champion New York Mets, the last Mets team to make it to the World Series. Before his career in baseball, he served his country as a member of the United States Marine Corps, serving a tour of duty in Vietnam, and from his overseeing the Oakland A's, leading them to three consecutive World Series, winning one World Championship in 1989, serving as the Vice President of Baseball Operation in the Commissioner's Office, a CEO of the San Diego Padres, and two stints with the Mets, Sandy Alderson has impacted Major League Baseball throughout his career. He's also the man who hired Terry Collins to manage the Mets. It's a pleasure to welcome Sandy Alderson to Talking with TC. Sandy, welcome.
Hey, happy to be here. Happy to see Terry again.
Hi, Sandy. And certainly I want to thank you more than anybody for being on the show today. And certainly, you know, I owe you a tremendous debt of thanks for hiring me and letting me have my chance to get back to the big leagues and managing a great organization. And, you know, our success in New York certainly came down from the top, and that's from you on down. So it was a wonderful experience for me and everybody else. So I'm really pleasure to have you on the show tonight.
Well, very, very happy to be here. And, you know, the first big decision we had to make in 2010/11 was pick a manager. And among many, many mistakes, we made the right decision there. So without Terry at the helm, his leadership, his authenticity, I think, and the relationship that you established with the media and the fans in New York, we would not have had the success we did. So that was a fortuitous decision on our part, Terry.
Thank you. And, you know, Sandy, every place I go, and I do a lot of these podcasts for these different people that do Mets podcasts, and always one of the big questions always was about, you know, 2015 and, you know, what was it like in 2015? And I said, you know, the guy to answer that question was Sandy Alderson. He's the one who put all the pieces together, because I've discussed some of those lineups we had early in 2015. And, you know, there's always been the big question is, you know, what part of those things all of a sudden did you say, hey, like, I think we got a shot here, and then made the moves to make us as good as we end up being?
You know, Terry, that's a very good question, because I think if you looked at the probabilities and made a decision strictly on what was likely to happen, I don't think we would have made the moves that we did. But I think there were a couple of things. First of all, I give a lot of credit to the Wilpon family. Because, you know, as we got up to the trade deadline, we weren't in a commanding position. We were behind. And yet, you know, we made the effort before the deadline, at the deadline, and subsequent to the deadline, you know, to add players. And it was one of the few times where most of what we did worked out. There were some deals that didn't happen. Wilmer Flores trade comes to mind that turned out well for us as well. So, but I think it was, you know, the willingness of ownership to go for it at that time. And we had the opportunity. There hadn't been an opportunity to go for it the previous 3 or 4 years. And so I'm really glad we did. And it was sort of against the odds, as I said earlier.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, I stay in touch with a lot of the coaches, and one of the things we talked about was how all of a sudden, you know, front office Fred and Jeff and yourself got together and said, hey, look, let's make a run at this thing. And the pieces you put together, you know, Sandy, I've always said, you know, it wasn't just everybody points to Cespedes as being the key, and maybe he was the key, but you know what it was? It was the fact that we brought in so many good pieces. You know, Kelly Johnson came back, and Juan Uribe came back, and then we, you know, Conforto came up, and that allowed, you know, Michael Kadire to be a good bench, one of the best bench players, and the two relievers. People forget those guys because they always think about the lineup itself, but man, the job that Tyler Clifford and Addison Reed did was just off the charts. I mean, able to bridge that gap to Familia. So, I mean, there were a number of trades, not just that one big trade that made a difference for us, I thought.
No, I think you're right. And the those are the deals that have to work out in order for the team to be successful. I mean, obviously, Cespedes was a huge factor. And, you know, without him, we probably would not have gotten the World Series. But at the same time, as you said, that there were smaller contributions made by, you know, a number of different people. I mean, I remember a home run by Kirk Neuenhuis in Washington that was huge for us. So, adding those little pieces, not at great expense in terms of, you know, player talent, but definitely made a difference and were acquired under, you know, different circumstances. I said earlier, a couple of those were before the deadline. I think one of those relievers was after the deadline. But in any event, constantly looking around, and it was a credit to the guys in the and women in the front office put those pieces together.
You know, Sandy, for the fans who watch this show, I mean, you had a professional. I mean, you have a professional scouting staff and an amateur scouting staff. How many of those scouts? I mean, on the professional side, how many guys did you have in the office or out in the field that were looking at talent?
Oh, we probably had 10 to 12, and then we obviously had people inside the organization representing those 10 or 12 and their viewpoints. And of course, you know, a lot of it can be followed statistically as well, but I don't really recall any of those smaller deals or even the Cespedes trade being, you know, driven analytically in a material way. It wasn't about, you know, some crazy science. It was about scouting for the most part. And then some common sense interpretations of their performance. you know, sometimes I remember we acquired one reliever. I don't know if it was in 2015 or not, but just as an example, making a decision between one or the other and acquiring a player because he was in the other league. And as a pitcher, you know, would not have been seen by most of the hitters in the league. So, you know, that's a data point, but it's, you know, it's not terribly analytical. So a lot of common sense, I think, went into those decisions. And because they were low cost, low risk, my attitude is always, let's go for it, take a chance, see what happens. and if it doesn't work, you can try to do something else.
Yeah, well, I will tell you, you know, when you're sitting on that bench and you're looking down that what you have to pinch it, and all of a sudden, you know, we got the likes of, you know, Uribe and Kadire and, you know, Kelly Johnson. I mean, that put all the pressure on the other manager, like who you want to face, because we had a weapon for him. And that, I mean, I've said it ever since then, when teams start building, you know, start trying to build for, you know, a pennant chase or something, you better have quality backup players. Because you know that there's going to be injuries, there's going to be guys that get tired, there's going to be guys get in slumps, and the fact that we had big league players to put in some of those roles in those places, I mean, that made the whole difference for, you know, as far as our team went.
Yeah, and in addition to being great depth, there was a lot of flexibility within those players because of their positional flexibility and right, left, et cetera. So. it all came together. And as you recall, leading up to the trade deadline was sort of a semi-disaster. 3 or 4 days in a row, we had, you know, we lost a game in extra innings in the rain. We had the the trade that didn't come off. I mean, there was a lot of stuff going on that we just had to persevere and work through. But it was a test of one's resilience over that 3 or 4 days, both on the field and in the front office.
So, Sandy, that, you know, the trade that didn't materialize, the Wilmer Flores trade. How did that get leaked out? How did that happen? We talked every day, and I knew that if something happened during the game, you would have called and said, "Hey, you got to get this guy out of the lineup." But the fans were down there cheering. David Wright came in the dugout, said, "Oh, we just traded Wilmer Flores." I mean, how did that become such a fiasco?
I have no idea how those things get out, but the fact is they do, and you know, at the point where we're in those discussions, I'm sure there was certainly people aware of the situation on the Mets side, people aware of the situation on the Milwaukee side, and the Major League Baseball had to be aware of what was going on because all of this was pending a physical, and the Players Association had to be involved. So normally is involved. So, you know, it could have come from anywhere. I just make the assumption always that things are going to leak out. My mistake was, not wanting to say anything until the deal was absolutely done. And years before, I got criticized for trading Jose Canseco out of the on-deck circle. So, you know, I've had other issues with timing, but in this particular case, the fact that nothing was announced certainly was prudent because the deal was never finalized. And I'll tell you, in the 8 years or so we were together, 7, 8, whatever it was, I think that was the only deal that our doctors killed. It was the only one that our doctors said, "No, we can't do this." We've had other trades that have been nixed by doctors for other teams, but I think that was the only one that our doctors nixed. So when they said something, we didn't take it lightly because they did. So seldom did they raise an issue.
Well, you know, Sandy, I know when you came in, you know, one of the things that was quite obvious is you were going to rebuild. You were going to rebuild the team. I mean, that trade that you made with Toronto to get Syndergaard and Darno, and I know there's a third guy involved in that, but I mean, that was a huge trade, and you know, to get two major pieces for an RA, obviously coming off the Cy Young Award, but that was a huge trade. The trade that you made with Beltran to get Zach Wheeler, I mean, those were huge deals that changed our organization.
I'll tell you what was really important, starting with the Zach Wheeler deal, is that when everybody knew Beltran was on the trading block, as it were, and the commentators kept saying we weren't going to get much for him, weren't going to get much for him, and suddenly we get Zach Wheeler, who was one of their top prospects, and nobody expected us to be able to get that kind of value. It really was a point at which people started to have a little more confidence in our regime, if you will, and I said, "Wow, okay, they were able to do that." And then when we traded RA and got those players back, I don't think anybody felt we were going to get that kind of value either. And so during the years we were building, there were certain things that happened, and those were two instances that I think helped build our credibility. Now, I know you had David Wright on earlier. I think another thing that gave us credibility was David Wright, and not just signing David Wright, but before that, I don't know if you recall, but he sort of endorsed our strategy. He endorsed our approach to building the team, and that was huge also. I think that it really was a statement for our fans that I know I and I think others really appreciated the fact. It wasn't just that we signed him. It was that he made a statement in support of what we were doing. And I think that was another instance where we were given a little more time based on, these occasional data points where things seem to be going in the right direction.
Yeah, they were. I mean, they were. There was so many pieces that had to fall into place. And I will tell you, you know, those last few years, you know, we were to be reckoned with. We had that good young pitching, and you know, I remember when you called up, when we brought up Montero and DeGrom. I mean, you know, two young guys, and man, they just, you know, they. Of course, Jake has, you know, really took off, and even today, Montero has become an outstanding pitcher. So, you know, I thought one of the things we did, and probably one of my most proud days as a Met, was the day we played 9 players in a lineup who were drafted by the Mets, signed by the Mets, developed by the Mets, and were now in the lineup at the same time. I thought that was one of the true, things that our organization during that time should have been very proud of.
Yeah, no, I agree with it. And that had much to do with Omar Minaya, as well as the scouts that were there under my leadership. But one of the greatest days, I forget what year it was, you probably remember it. I think we played a doubleheader, and it may have been in Atlanta. And Matt Harvey started one of the games, and it might have been Syndergaard who pitched the other game. But it was, you know, a doubleheader, Harvey and one of our other, maybe it was DeGrom, I don't know. But I can remember how excited and sort of nervous I was going into that day that these two young guys were on the mound for us against the Braves. I think it was the Braves.
But, you know, Sandy, one of the things, I think one of the hardest things to do, and I spent so many years in AAA, and you know, you can only compare or talk about your guys against the competition you're watching them against. But, you know, when somebody gets called up, you know, and you're saying, oh, you're going to go to the big leagues, you know, as a AAA manager, you're sitting there saying, well, geez, I hope he does all right. The job that those guys did, those young pitchers, when they all come up, every one of those guys seemed like they were ready, whether it was Harv or DeGrom, even though Syndergaard was a little wild when he came up, he still, you know, he wasn't afraid to throw the ball. He wasn't afraid to attack guys. And, you know, Steven Matz, yeah. My God, his first two starts, you'd have thought he was going to be a gangbuster. And obviously we've had some injury issues with those guys, but still every one of those guys, when they got up there, they were ready. So I thought it was a real credit to what our minor league system had did. You know, the pitching guys and the field coordinator and everybody else down there got those players ready for us.
Yeah, no, I agree. If you look at 2016, I think the difference between getting in the playoffs and not was the arrival of a couple of other young pitchers. Seth Lugo was one, came up sort of mid-season, late season. I can't recall exactly when. But those guys made a difference. And every team says they're gonna win through their farm system. You know, we're gonna build up our farm system and sustain our success through the farm system. And yeah, everybody, they're 30 teams. They all say the same thing. But the question is, how are you going to actually do that? And are you successful? And so even where these teams, you know, tear down their roster and going to rebuild through the draft, the tear down is relatively easy. It's the build back that's difficult, and not every club is successful doing it. And I'm proud to say, and I think you would agree, Terry, that we never tore the Mets down. Starting in 2011, it was never, you know, we never intentionally, maybe it was a mistake not to, but I'm not sure that New York is a place where you can actually tear down a team and not try to be competitive. But we never tore it down. We always tried to be competitive, didn't always spend the most money, weren't always as successful as we would have liked, but we never tore it down. And yet we still, within 5 years, got to the World Series and back-to-back playoffs for the first time in a while. So it can be done without tearing it down.
Well, Sandy, I agree with that. I remember my time as AAA manager in Los Angeles. You know, one of the things that Lasorda used to talk about endlessly was, you know, hey, look, we are never going to rebuild in Los Angeles. we're going to add on. We're going to try work, but we, you know, we're not getting rid of everybody and try to start over. You can't do that. And especially in New York, that's what I totally agree with you. You can't do that in New York. And so anytime I read or I hear about that's going to happen, I think that's not going to happen in that city. You just, you know, there's too much hair or too much, you know, history there. And you know, and by the way, you've got some, you know, you can stay competitive as they're showing right now. And they're coming back after a tough start. And heck, who knows what the next 3 months are going to hold. So I think it's going to be fun. But I know that it's one of the hardest things going is to say, hey, well, we're going to rebuild our minor league system. So, you know, as a former farm director, I know that's hard to do.
Easier said than done.
Yeah. So, John, I know you've got some questions for Sandy. You're a lifelong Mets fan, and so fire away.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Terry. Sandy, you were talking about the franchise wasn't being torn down when you got hired as the 12th GM in Mets history. After 2010, you were responsible for turning the franchise around. Take us back to that time. Talk to us about the hiring, why you took the job, because you had great success previous to that, and what motivated you to go to New York to work with the Wilpons and the New York Mets?
Good question. I think there were a lot of things going on. I had left the San Diego Padres in 2000 after the 2008 season. Actually did some teaching at Berkeley in California, and then ended up in the Dominican Republic working for the commissioner doing some things. And this opportunity came up. There were a variety of factors. One was that I had lived in New York before, so I knew that my wife and I would enjoy New York. It was a great challenge. I mean, look, it's the Mets. And so that was certainly intriguing. I did know the Wilpons from my time in the commissioner's office. We weren't, you know, Fred and I were not close friends, but I did know Fred and had interacted with him at meetings and so forth. I thought it would be a great challenge and thought if we had success in New York, it would probably be as sweet or sweeter than any other place you could imagine. So, I was always looking for a challenge. I mean, I went to the Dominican Republic for that length of time because nobody else would do it mostly. And I thought I could, have an impact. And so I brought the same attitude to New York.
And you began building the front office team and you brought some of the old associates and executives that work with the person you mentored who succeeded you out in Oakland, Billy Bean. You brought in J.P. Ricciardi, was hired as your special assistant to the GM, Paul D. Podesta as a VP of player personnel. And with the limited budget that you had to work with at that time, was your philosophy back then possibly to duplicate the operation of the A's using cybermetrics, the principles that became known as Moneyball with the hires that you brought to New York with you?
Well, remember, we had been using analytics in Oakland since the early 80s.
Yep.
Not that we used analytics to the exclusion of anything else. And keep in mind that analytics have evolved over time with the availability of more and more data. So if you go back to when we started doing this in the early mid 80s, there really wasn't that much data. It was a concept, you know, it was an approach that has been borne out over the last 40 years, basically, through more and more data. The more data we get, the firmer the concept becomes. So we weren't trying to duplicate anything that was necessarily, new, but JP, you know, is more of an old school, on the field type evaluator. And Paul, at the time was viewed, and I think a little bit unfairly, as the quintessential analyst Paul certainly brought a lot more to the table than that. But through those two, you're able to bring certainly two different approaches. And, you know, the key is figuring out a way to blend them together. And that's the difficult thing. Again, people say they're going to use analytics and more old school subjective evaluation. But the question is, how do you put those things together? In what proportions and how do they actually blend with one another? But those two I had tremendous respect for, and I was fortunate that they were willing to come to New York. And they were both very instrumental in getting us to the playoffs in 15 and 16.
And you had a big decision to make in regard to manager. I'm sure there were other candidates as well. What led you to Terry Collins and bringing him in, who then became the longest tenured Mets manager in their history?
Well, so I had known Terry myself. We weren't close by any means, but we had crossed paths from time to time. May have been in instructional league several times in Arizona. So we were acquaintances. Paul DePodesta had been with the Dodgers, was the general manager of the Dodgers when Terry was there. And so Paul was very supportive. And then it was, a matter of going through the interview process. And I think we were all impressed with, you know, what Terry brought to the table. He had prior experience as a manager player development as well. Long history in the game in a variety of capacities. So, we were very happy with the decision we made at the time. And it was borne out to have been the right decision.
Well, I do want to touch upon 2015, and I know you both spoke about it, but it was one of the most exciting years in the history of the New York Mets as a fan. There was nothing like it. It was just so exciting, that last quarter of the season, last half of the season. The pivotal part, as you guys mentioned, was the last week of July, and that became its own documentary with the film 5 Days in July, which covered it all. That week transformed the Mets. Now, how often were you and Terry talking during that time? Because you had the obviously the Flores situation, Conforto was brought up, Kelly Johnson, Uribe, and then finally getting Cespedes at the very couple of minutes before the trade deadline, I believe. Yeah. So tell us about that communication process with you and the manager of the team as this hectic week unfolded for everybody associated with the Mets and watching the Mets.
Well, I don't recall exactly all the conversations we had. I'm sure tried to keep Terry as informed as possible. The thing about that last two or three days was that things were changing almost hourly. You know, we lost to San Diego, I think, the day before the deadline. And because they beat us, they thought they had a chance at the playoffs. So they took one of their players off the trade market just, you know, as a result of that game. So, and that was just 24 hours or so before the deadline. So things were constantly changing. Cespedes wasn't really an option until the last 24 hours or so. So, I think generally what I try to do is make sure that, the manager, Terry in this case, is kept up to speed, in part because, you know, managers are important in terms of their input into these deals. So, you know, I've always thought that, you know, general managers, front offices put the roster together. But the manager has input into that the composition of the roster. Conversely, you know, the manager writes out the lineup and uses the players and does it the way he wants to, with some input from the front office. In my estimation, in recent years, there's been maybe even too much influence of front offices on what goes on the field. But certainly in the case of trades and what have you, it's always my firm policy to keep everyone informed, because they also, in addition to being informed, have input. And you never know when that input is going to be critical.
Can you give us one of your favorite Terry Collins stories?
Well, I don't know. The one that comes immediately to mind is the fifth game of the playoffs against the Dodgers. And I remember Terry before the now I should give you some context here. Probably about a week, 10 days before that, I was diagnosed with cancer. I mean, just right at the end of the season in 2015. It was, you know, we in Philadelphia, we just clinched the division. Anyway, so I'm sort of out of it at that point. I mean, my mind is, you know, in all kinds of different places. And I remember Terry coming saying, hey, we're going to use Syndergaard in relief if we have to. And, you know, it's probably something I should have thought of. But Terry and our pitching coach said that that's what we're going to do. And that's what we did. And it was absolutely critical to winning that fifth game. So, you know, that's what I mean. You know, having good communication between manager and front office is really important, that it goes both ways. And, that was an instance in which, you know, it was all on the line and that was a great decision to use him. I don't forget, was it the seventh inning, Terry? Something like that. Anyway, and it was, you know, it was huge. So.
All right. Thank you.
John, I'm going to interject here a little bit. You know, one of the things I've always thought as a manager, first of all, you know, it was just like Sandy says, it's my job to the guys that got the names in the locker room. I got to get them better. That's my job. It's his job to put the names in there. And I could be wrong. He may have an instance, but I don't think there was one time in 7 years where I said, we need to do this. I know Sandy was on top of everything. He had a feel for what's going on. He knew what we needed. He knew what we could get. He knew what we could, you know, we couldn't give up. So I stayed out of that. I had enough stuff going on in the clubhouse and on the field. I knew that other stuff was well taken care of. So, and I may be the exception. I know there was a lot of managers who have input on trades and this. Hey, look, that for me is not my job. My job is to take who I got and try to work with them because, you know, we all want the best players and we know that that's an impossibility, but you know, that's why I say, I look back and what Sandy did. And that's why I've always been enamored by, gosh, you know, at what time did they all of a sudden say, hey, let's take a run at this. And certainly it was their decision, you know, to pull off the deals and what happened. But I think it's just it's an easier working dynamic. Sandy and I talked almost, if not every day, pretty much every day about something. And, you know, his input on this was listened, and he would ask me questions and I'd answer. But I'd never knocked on his door and said, hey, you think we should get a pitcher here? So that wasn't my job, in my opinion. So, and I never had to worry about that because I knew it was going to get done. So.
Well, Terry was not someone who was always looking for something else. Terry understood what he had, and as he just stated eloquently, needed to get him to succeed and become better and focus on that rather than focusing on somebody that we didn't currently have. But it worked pretty well.
So, John, you have
excellent
fan questions for Sandy, I think.
Yeah, we do. We have a couple of fan questions, but before we get to that, Sandy, I would like to ask you a question about your help in the sale of the Mets to Steve Cohen, which led to your returning to the organization as team president in 2020, and the assistance you gave to the new Mets owner, transitioning him into the business of baseball. What was that experience like for you to help usher in the new Mets owners, Steve and Alex Cohen?
Well, first of all, it was an honor to serve in that capacity for Steve and Alex for the 3 years that I did, two as president and then as a consultant. Look, Steve, Alex, they're quick studies. So it didn't take long for them to get a sense of, you know, the industry and obviously lifelong Mets fans themselves. So they residents of the New York area. So they, you know, they were familiar with all the basics. You know, baseball has its rules and what have you, and you know, things that happen at trade deadlines and in the off season and in the regular season. So there's kind of a tempo and a cyclical seasonal aspect to things. You know, Steve and Alex acclimated to that very quickly. I was really excited for the Mets when, you know, Steve showed interest in buying the team. I did talk with him on many occasions before he actually got the team. Not sure that my input was all that helpful. Nonetheless, it was an exciting time, and I really appreciated the opportunity and had a good time during the 3 years that I was there.
And you would say that the Mets franchise, long-term-wise, it looks like it's in a healthy situation with ownership and them laying the foundation, the groundwork to have a successful franchise in New York with the Met fans, who are always very demanding.
Yeah. Well, look, Steve, bring some resources. And that is, I think, reflected not only in the roster and will be reflected in the roster longer term, but also in just the other amenities that exist. One of the things I've been watching the games periodically this year, and just the new lighting and you know, different seating locations and so forth. There's a lot of investment that's gone into City Field to make it a first-class venue. So, and I think, you know, Steve and Alex have had a big impact in those areas as well. So, I think and, you know, David Stearns, highly respected throughout the league. And I think as we're starting to see, smaller deals that he's made have made a difference. So with ownership, with management on the baseball side, business operations, Steve has invested in quite a bit. You know, I think the future is tremendous for the Mets.
Yeah, we do too, for sure. Let me get a few questions from the fans in. The first question comes from our Instagram account. Sandy, are there any free agents you might have been able to sign and didn't that you regret today?
Most of my regrets are about free agents I did actually sign.
Okay. There you go. Good answer.
The answer is no. With one exception.
Okay.
And I've told him this personally. I wish we'd held on to Daniel Murphy.
Ah, yes.
You know, Murph had that great finish to the 2015 season. You know, he became a free agent and ended up with Washington. I wish we had made a stronger effort to keep him. And my guess is he feels the same way. That he wishes maybe he had stayed with the Mets. That would be one that definitely got away. But I got plenty that I did sign that go in the negative side of the ledger.
Got it. We got another question that came in on our email account, the Terry Collins Show at gmail.com. Sandy, you've had such an amazing career in the game of baseball. Does one thing stand out about all your accomplishments as your proudest memory in baseball?
Ooh. Well, that shouldn't be that hard because, you know, my positive memories, I can count on one or two hands. Well, one hand. I'll tell you one thing that I really, to this day, remember fondly, and that was winning the gold medal in Sydney, the baseball competition, USA won with Tommy Lasorda as manager. I was involved in that. And the great thing about that was, aside from the fact that we won the gold medal, was that it was like a regular, it was like an entire season, you know, telescoped down to like 2 weeks. So you had all the, you know, the highs and lows were daily, and it was a do or die on a daily basis. International baseball is fantastic for that reason. You know, that was a real high point, certainly. Getting the World Series in 2015, if we had won the World Series, of course we didn't win the World Series, that would rank right there with, we hear about 69 and 86 all the time, but 15, because of what you said, all the drama surrounding the trade deadline and then the last couple of months of the season, it was an incredible season. And, we didn't win, and like in the 40 of the 41 years that I've been around, or whatever the number is, it's only once that we actually won the World Series, and that was a long time ago. So you have to take your solace in lesser accomplishments from time to time. But 2015 was certainly a great year.
Yeah, the 2015 will always be remembered. What an exciting season that was. We have one final question from our fans, and that comes from our X account. Sandy, did you enjoy the Moneyball movie with Brad Pitt?
I did enjoy the movie. Remember, it was a movie. And so, you know, you could pick it apart for accuracy and wouldn't enjoy it at all. But, I thought it was a great, human interest story. And, it portrayed Billy and Paul D. Podesta and a couple of others in ways that weren't caricatures, but, and ultimately obviously based in to some extent in reality, but, I did enjoy the movie. Yes.
Well, that's all we got, from the questions, and, it's been a pleasure to speak to you. I'll turn it back over to Terry.
Well, Sandy, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and all you've done for me and certainly my family. And it was an absolute honor to work for you and be around you. And I hope we can keep staying in touch and get a chance to see each other from time to time. I know we got stuff going on once in a while at Citi Field, and we got to get out and play some golf. You and I haven't played golf in a while, so we got to get out and do that. You still play, don't you?
All right. I still play, yeah.
Good. Well,
not that, very well, but
that would be fun for me. And thank you so much again for being on the show. And let's just hope we can do something later in the summer that, as we talk about, as the season starts to wind down.
Absolutely, look forward to it. All right,
thanks, Sandy.
Take care, gentlemen.
Thank you, Sandy. That was such a great experience with Sandy Alderson. Here's a guy that really should be in the Hall of Fame, don't you think, Terry?
Without a question. There's no doubt in my mind in the near future, his name is not going to be brought up and he's going to get in there. What he did, he didn't expound on it, but what he did in the Dominican was off the charts. I mean, he changed the way, players were signed down there. He made it, guys were being robbed by his agents, and Sandy saved a lot of guys. So, he certainly needs to be in.
And he always, he always made the right moves, and he was the guy, he was the boss. So there was no going in and making suggestions to him or anything like that.
No, John, I will tell you, it used to be once in a while, something would happen like on somebody else's team. And one of the coaches would come in my office and he said, "Hey, you got to go and tell Sandy, so-and-so is going to be able, we got to go get that guy." I said, "Boys, let me tell you something. I'm not walking in Sandy Alderson's office and ask him for something. He knows exactly what's going on. I'm not going to embarrass myself by thinking that he's not aware that this guy's open or this guy's available." I said, "You guys are crazy." I said, "If I walk in and start telling him what I think he should do, he will fire me so fast it'll make your head spin. Let's just worry about who we got right now, and he'll let him take care of his job. He knows what he's doing."
Yeah.
Look at all, man. That was, yeah.
That was great. Yeah, it was great. One of the best interviews that we've had on the show. I mean, each and every week it's better and better. So that was amazing to bring Sandy on, because so many people ask about him and what an architect he was for that team. And Terry, now it's time for the amazing hero of the week. So we'll get to a video shortly on that. But we do want to tell you about Tunnel to Towers. Born on America's darkest day of 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been helping American heroes ever since. When a first responder or military service member doesn't come home and young children are left behind, Tunnel to Towers pays the mortgage on the family home to lift the financial burden. For catastrophically injured veterans and first responders, Tunnel to Towers builds mortgage-free smart homes, which enable severely injured heroes to live more independent lives. Through the foundation's homeless veterans program, Tunnel to Towers is providing housing and needed services to homeless vets. More than 3,000 were helped in 2023 alone. The foundation's 9/11 Institute is helping teachers educate kids about our nation's darkest day, so America will never forget. People who put their lives on the line for our country and our communities need your help now more than ever. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good and never forget 9/11 or the sacrifices of this country's heroes. Donate $11 a month at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. And as we do each and every week, we're going to feature an amazing hero. We have a great video that Tunnel has sent us. And this week, we honor Amazing Hero of the Week, U.S. Army Sergeant Brandon Adam. So let's go to that right now.
I got hit with an EFP. It's a copper plate, and that is an inch thick. That tore through the vehicle, tore through everything. I was just lucky. I had a phenomenal medic, phenomenal first response to my issues. You just gotta take it on the chin and keep moving forward, man.
For every wounded veteran, there's a family behind them too, who wants life to be accessible and obtainable and as normal as possible. And so when the foundation provides homes for families, that happens.
The house is an open ranch style floor plan. It's made for wheelchairs to not touch anything. All the cutouts for cabinetry, sinks, dishes, for countertops to move down for me to be able to cook better. Cabinets with pull-down racks in it where I can pull it down and get cups, plates easy. When I'm in my home, I'm not fighting the world right now, because it's made for me. It's made for people with disabilities, for people in chairs. They went all out. They understand what it takes to actually have an accessible home. And then they do it for mortgage free, and it's just something that I can never repay. It's not lost on me what they've done. It's a generational gift. It's meant to change the trajectory of my family.
I think the home was actually like very much a healing for everybody involved. It's amazing that it's accessible for other wounded soldiers, his teammates who are disabled. It's equitable and comfortable and accessible for anybody we invite in there.
This is a movement. If you sacrifice and if you put yourself at risk like that, TTT is coming in and figuring out how to ease your life a little bit. That's the kind of energy that's behind this thing, because we have to keep going for the next guy.
Hey, I'm Cole Hauser. I want you to join me in supporting our nation's heroes and their families. It's only $11 a month. Go to T2T.org.
Every time I see one of those videos, Terry, it's just amazing what this foundation does. And we're just so proud to be associated with them.
Absolutely. It's a huge honor, John. And as you know, I just recently witnessed it firsthand, some of the things they do. And it's, if you're going to ever want to help somebody, it'd be, those are the guys you want to help. I heard a statement at the function in Bradenton last week that made a lot of sense, that, you know, veteran and homeless should never be used in the same sentence again. And that's due to Tunnel to Towers' willingness to house these guys, get them help, and get them back in the flow of society.
Yes, very, very true. Terry, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Another good episode in the books. I want to remind everybody that you could follow Terry on X and Instagram at @TerryCollins_10. For those of you on Facebook, we do have a page there for the Terry Collins Show. And you could follow me on Instagram and X at John Arezzi. And be sure to subscribe to this podcast on any of the audio platforms that you get your weekly podcast. Just look for the Terry Collins Show, and don't forget to subscribe to our channel on YouTube so you can be notified when all new content does come out. Until next time, this is John Arezzi for Terry Collins. Have a great week, everyone.